You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast. We talk about all of Major League Baseball. I'm yours, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully on today's episode, which is being dropped on the 6th day of December, 2020. It's time for the Sunday request, and I have two questions that come from two different listeners that they have a strange and kind of unfortunate connection. I'll explain what I mean later on. This show is available on the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available wherever you get your podcasts. When you're staying at home during these, well, it's a holiday season. It's a weird holiday season. And as you're staying at home, and please, let's do everything we can to beat this. And one thing you can do is you can ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB, or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network with your team every single day, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball with Scott Cullen. Hey, you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On MLB Pod. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. And that Twitter handle, Sully Baseball, is where I would like you to send the Sunday requests, because every Sunday here during the off season, and maybe I'll continue this into the regular season, I throw the ball out to you. You know, I'm going to be doing 5 episodes a week during the off season, and I'd like to cover topics that are interesting to you and that you want to hear. Especially, you know, these are the months where you need a baseball podcast because there's no baseball being played. None. You know, and I've been watching a lot of old baseball clips because I'm working on a writing project. If I'm making a little bit of progress in a writing project about baseball in the early 1970s, specifically in October 1972, I'm in the middle of reading the biography of Roberto Clemente. And man, the more you read about Clemente, the more you realize that A, he was a great player, B, he was an even better man, and C, he was really slighted by everybody. Read the biography of Roberto Clemente and just watch up. There's lots of stuff on YouTube, lots of great clips. There's a wonderful interview, a half-hour interview that he did just months before he died in 1972. It's just wonderful, and it makes you really appreciate Roberto Clemente. And I'm going to tease something. Clemente and what could have been with his career, not talking about his death. I'm talking about what could have been with his actual career, playing career from the mid-1950s until the end of the 1972 playoffs, where he had 3,000 hits, gold gloves, was the greatest defensive right fielder of all time, batting champion, most valuable player, all the stuff, and became the single greatest and biggest star of all of Latin America, and became one of the greatest figures in baseball history. He could have had a very different career if one organization did a couple things differently. And I think it would have made a team and a city, I don't know, could have created one of the greatest dynasties in the history of baseball. How about that for a tease? That's going to be a tease. That's going to be a show that's coming up. But this is the Sunday request, and I do have a couple of topics here. And the first one's kind of a fun one. It's from Indre Vis, I-N-D-R-E-V-I-S. I don't know how to pronounce that, so I'm just going to spell it out. Indre Vis, is that what it is? Forgive me if I don't know how to say it. Sometimes Twitter handles are interesting to say out loud. They're not meant to be said out loud. Wrote to me. Sunday request question. Will we see another player manager? As you know, Pete Rose was the last. I could argue yes or no. Yeah, it really worked out great with Pete Rose. It worked out fabulous with Pete Rose. Will we see another player manager? I think there's a possibility for it. In fact, there's two that I would do right now while I'm doing this podcast. I would make them player managers, but you used to see player managers a bunch. In fact, the whole question of why does the manager wear the uniform? You know, can you imagine if Bill Belichick had to wear shoulder pads or if Phil Jackson had to wear the shorts? It's a hacky joke. We've heard it forever. There used to be player managers were quite common. And you saw great success with player managers, that it was they were in uniform because they were managing the darn team. Ty Cobb was a player manager for a little bit. Rogers Hornsby won the World Series as a player manager. Bucky Harris won the World Series as the manager of the world champion Washington Senators in 1924. He wet the bed as a manager the next year in Game 7 of the World Series. Yeah, think about it. Between 1924, 25, and 26, every year the World Series featured a player manager. The last time the Indians won the World Series, they had a player manager in Lou Boudreau. They used to happen from time to time. Joe Torre briefly was a player manager for the New York Mets. And it was common. It was a common thing. And it became... You started to want to have the players focus on their job, I guess. You saw that there was a wellspring of knowledge to be able to have a manager not also be having to play. I don't know how many player coaches there have been in other sports. I know Bill Russell was a player coach and led the Celtics to a couple of championships. I wonder if Michael Jordan could have been a player coach. He would have had interesting plans. Throw it to me. But we haven't had one. And it was kind of a novelty when Pete Rose came back to the Reds as player manager, because it hadn't happened. I think the last player manager was probably Torre in the late 70s. And it was not a common thing. If I'm not mistaken, and I actually should have looked this up, it just dawned on me that this may have been the case. I think Don Kessinger might have been a player manager briefly with the Chicago White Sox. But that's neither here nor there. The fact of the matter is, yeah, I think they could be, especially when we start seeing that the manager's job is becoming more and more the person to get the notes from the front office and less about having to do their own strategy. I think if you gave Kevin Cash truth serum, he would say, I would have let Blake Snell continue to pitch in Game 6 of the World Series last year. And if you gave everyone else in the world truth serum as well, they would say, don't give me the truth serum. We'll just tell you right now, he should have pitched. That clearly was a front office decision. And, you know, I mean, look, we've all seen Moneyball, and we've all seen the concept of the front office making the calls and having a much bigger voice than the manager. That, of course, that film was a little bit of Billy Bean propaganda. I happen to really like Moneyball a lot as a movie, but we shouldn't point to it as reality. But we're starting to see more and more that the manager is not going to be the complete brains of the organization, but is going to be the person to manage the egos and manage the personalities within the team while the lineups and the strategy is being dictated through analytics. Whether or not you like that is irrelevant right now and is not what this discussion's about right now. That's the reality of what's happening in baseball. Now, with that being said, the idea of a manager being a multi-million dollar contract for a manager and more people thinking that a manager doesn't really contribute that many wins this way or the other, you could see a situation where the front office might say, well, geez, why don't we just have the player, this one, you, everyone loves you. Why don't you just, you come in there and you play and you manage. Why don't you do that? I do think it would happen. I think, or the possibility of it happening is there. I would have said that a prime candidate for that would have been Yadier Molina. The one thing that pulls me back and say that is I think that Mike Schilt, the manager of the St. Louis Cardinals, has shown himself to being quite a fine manager. I think he's done a very good job, and I think that they should continue to have him be the manager of the club. Now, Yadier Molina right now is a free agent, and he could potentially sign with the team that needs a manager. There's a couple that's just sitting there right now. Let's take, for example, the Mets, shall we? Who knows if Luis Rojas is the best candidate to be the manager moving forward? I don't know that. You don't know that. The Mets didn't really contend in the 60 games that they had, which is a bit of a shame when you consider the fact that they had a potential Cy Young Award winner on the team, and more than half the teams made the postseason. That's kind of crazy that the Mets were never really a contender. You may want to say that they would want to have a new manager. And Yadier Molina is floating out there as a free agent to maybe insert as a catcher and be a part-time catcher and be the manager of the team. And that's a suggestion right there. Now, of course, you'd see Yadier Molina coming back to manage the team that he helped sink in 2006. But, stuff like that happens all the time. Now, the other two player-manager situations are in situations where they're teams whose current managerial situation, I think, is a mess. And one of them is one of the most exciting teams in baseball. And another one is a team that is very near and dear to my heart. Let's get to that one right now. Gabe Kapler stinks. I'm sorry. He stinks as a manager. I'm not sure what he's like as a human being, but we have a sample size. We have three seasons of watching him manage. He has yet to get a team above 500, even though he's had teams that have had some talent on them. I don't see him getting better. I don't see anything about how he manages, how he handles the team. I've seen nothing that clues me in that this is the right person to hand the car keys over to. Now, granted, the Giants were a strange team last year that, once again, they couldn't make the postseason. They had a very old team last year, and they obviously have to scrape out a lot of players and start to play younger players. And it's going to be a very painful rebuild in San Francisco. And they have a potential young star to groom in Joey Bart. And of course, Buster Posey, one of the biggest stars in their team history, has, sat out last year because of COVID reasons, as was his prerogative. And I don't blame him for a nanosecond. I probably would have done so as well. But think about this for a second. Think about, how do you have the front office keep doing the rebuild that they want to do, build a team around Joey Bart, and find a way to have Buster Posey still be a big part of the team? You know where I'm going with this? Player manager Buster Posey. Most of the time, Buster Posey is at first base. A few times, like a couple of times during the year, he'll play catcher. He'll mainly tutor Joey Bart the same way that Benji Molina, another great Molina, that Benji Molina helped Buster Posey in the early part of 2010, before eventually Posey took over the catching situation by himself. And you have, the fans would love it, because Posey's one of the single most popular players in the history of the San Francisco Giants, and it was a huge part of them winning those three World Series last decade. I thought it was an act of insanity that when Bruce Bochy retired, they didn't hand the car keys over to one of his lieutenants, like Roberto Kelly or Ron Wotus or Hensley Bam Bam Yunglins. I'm like, what are you doing? Why are you not having one of them be the new manager? But now it's Buster Posey's team. We tried it with Gabe Kapler. Do you know what? That was a one-year experiment. It didn't work. You have your front office talks to Posey and said, look, you're here for the long haul. You're going to be the player manager. Everyone on the team respects you. Let's all get on the same page of the direction of this team as we do the rebuild. And by the time the team's completely rebuilt, you'll probably stop playing and you'll be the full-time manager. And for the lack of a better word, a continuity that goes on there. So Buster Posey would be my first choice because, well, actually, no, it's my second choice, because Yadier Molina was my first choice one to go on for next year. My second choice is Buster Posey for where he is now to take over the team. The fans would love it. The team would obviously love it. They work it out with the front office. I think it could work out for everybody. The other one might be a little trickier, but hear me out. I do not think that Tony La Russa is going to work. I'm saying it right now. Sometimes you know it's not going to work. There's a situation. He's the wrong man for this team. He's just the wrong guy for the club. And when you look at a team sometimes and you're thinking, God, you know, we know in advance this is not going to work. We know in advance that this guy is not going to click with this team. This team already has a distinct personality that Tony La Russa could be the worst man to insert into this club. And instead of getting the oldest manager who is out of touch with this team, why not create the youngest manager who would absolutely be lockstep and barrel with every team? Is that an expression, lockstep and barrel? I don't know. Lockstep and barrel. I don't even know. I'm trying to use expressions I don't 100% understand. So hear me out. Could it not be player manager Tim Anderson? Look, he's already one of the smartest players in the game, one of the most respected players in the game. Certainly had the clubhouse's attention and be able to at least, maybe not as a long-term situation, to have him be, yeah, I'll run the team. Everyone at the team respects me. And again, get in line with the front office and be able to say, this is the club. Now, that might, would that cause division? I don't know. But if you look up, I mean, I would say possibly, you know, Yasmani Grandal, but I, you know, because I'm always looking for, you know, catchers are always, you know, good people to have as a, you know, potential manager, and Grandal is going to be there for the next couple of years. But this is really Anderson's team. Yeah, yeah, I know Jose Abreu won the MVP. Okay, so you can say, you know, Jose Abreu is the biggest star on the team. And I would not debate that for a nanosecond. But it's Anderson's club. Anderson appears to be the leader of this team. Just like in a team full of superstars that the Red Sox had in the 2000s, the person who was the head of that team, led that team, was the captain, Jason Varitek. In the Tony La Russa, when Tony La Russa had his great run in Oakland and Ricky Henderson won the MVP, Jose Canseco won the MVP, Dennis Eckersley won the MVP, Mark McGwire could have won the MVP a couple of times, but the person who was the leader of that team was Dave Stewart. So it's sometimes not the person who is winning the trophies, but it's the person who's in charge of the club. And excuse me, I really think that one of the most respected players in the game and someone who could be the face and brain of the White Sox, Tim Anderson. I know that's a long shot. Posey and Molina are much more of the traditional picks on there. But why not Anderson? Why not? It's got to be better than Tony La Russa. But I've been hinting at throughout this podcast what the biggest issue would be of a player manager. And that is going to be part of the main thrust of the second question on the Sunday requests we have here. But for all those managers, the potential managers, I really think they do a good job. I think they would know how to talk to their players. And I think that they would know how to reward their players. And I'll tell you one way I would reward those players is to get them a Built Bar. Now, if you don't know this, Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. They're improved and they've got great new flavors, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, apple almond crisp, to go along with their 12 original flavors, including my personal favorite, which is raspberry. They are 100% covered in chocolate. They're soft, they're easy to chew, and they're healthy. If you're trying to lose weight, maintain weight, and want to indulge in a delicious treat that's safe for the keto diet, that are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, you gotta try Built Bars. One of my favorite new flavors is the coconut almond, which has 18 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, and 5 grams of net carbs. Now, you can get a free cooler with purchase while supplies last. You go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Hey, it can't be a Sunday request without Jeff Cohen send me one. Hey, let me ask you all a question here. Can you? This is my favorite because Jeff could make my life a lot easier if you all help me. Because Jeff Cohen is one of my loyal listeners, has been for a while. Always sends me great questions. He's going to send me a great question every week because he's a machine. Now, I'm leaning a lot on Jeff for these Sunday requests, but if everyone sends me one or two Sunday requests a week, just a topic you want me to cover, and then Jeff was going to send his inevitable two or three, that'll help me with two episodes a week because I have my Sunday requests, which is for everyone else, and then I can have it be, you know, maybe Wednesdays with Jeff or something. I don't know how it'll be, but like maybe I'll bookend it. Maybe be Thursdays with Jeff. And I have Sunday and Thursday with topics from you all. And I fill in the middle episodes during the week. But in order to do that, I need to flood in and get more Sunday request stuff. So send me the Sunday request questions. Anything you want me to talk about, send it to me at Sully Baseball on Twitter. Also this week, I'm going to be talking a little bit about concepts of how to rethink how we look at stadiums, what the two Chicago teams should be doing. And I have a few other interesting guests who are not exactly people you would expect on a baseball show. We got some comedians, we got some writers, and maybe even politicians who are going to show up to Locked On MLB, as well as some of the other hosts of the Locked On Baseball podcast that you hear on this network. Hey, Jeff Cohen did send me one, and it does connect to the previous one that I just did about a player manager. He said, wouldn't it be prudent for the baseball, or MLB, and the MLB Players Associations to start negotiations now for the collective bargaining agreement? Why wait until the season's over? Or your thoughts on replacing the commissioner's office with a panel from the MLBPA and MLB owners? Well, that second part I've already talked about. I think there needs to be a third party. I think it has to be the baseball arbiter. It has to be someone who is separated from baseball and from the owners and from the players. It's almost the tie-breaking vote. Now, I've said it has to be someone with the best interests in the game at hand. And best interest isn't always the financial well-being of the owners or the players. Sometimes it is somewhere in between, and it's like it's the baseball arbiter. It can't be someone in the pocket of either side. And it's someone and I've always said that, you know, Bob Kendrick who's the head of the Negro League Baseball Museum, would be a great potential arbiter of baseball. Some people might want to say Bob Costa. Some people might, you know, say this and say that. There are other people out there. You know, I'm willing to throw my hat into the ring. I think there needs to be a third party that can be binding and to sort of be like a judge that both sides appeal to. Because as it goes right now, there's no judge that either one is appealing to. The commissioner of baseball works for the owners. The commissioner of baseball is not a third party. He's the head of the owners. And the Players Association head is the head of the players. And when these two butt, who do they appeal to? The only place they can appeal to is to the public. And the owners are always going to win that war, even when they're wrong. Because you could say, look at these players. They're already making millions and they're playing the game. And look at this. Some of these guys are making millions and millions of dollars. Johnny Bench only made $2 billion his whole career. This guy's a backup catcher and he's making five. There's all the ways the owners can win the battle through the media. And it makes for people saying ridiculous things. And so many fans always sometimes unwillingly take the owner's side on issues. How many times do you see people saying, well, it's really smart. They put together this team for a little bit of money and it's really great. That's the way it should be. Like, why? Why shouldn't you want to pay these players? Why wouldn't you want to have an owner who spends tons of money and puts a great product on the field? Why would you want to reward frugalness, especially when some of these, you know, when it's billionaire owners who can afford it? So I would like to see a third person involved in it, but let's get to the first part. The thing that connects the two is that the player manager situation is that I wonder how much distrust there is between players and ownership. And to have a player be the manager, it's almost as if, what side are you taking? You're taking orders from the management that could be taking away jobs, that could be trying to squeeze people out. If you're the player manager and you know the front office is trying to nickel and dime a player, or you know the front office is trying to push one player out, like, almost how can you do your job if you know there's an ulterior motive going on other than putting the best product on the field? Like, for example, I mean, Chris Bryant, when he was held in the minor league for an additional month, when it was very clear he was ready to come to the major leagues, and they held him down for an additional month so he would not qualify for free agency for another year. It was just manipulation. It wasn't about putting the best product on the field. Imagine you're a player and you have to come up to Chris Bryant. You're the player manager. As a player, you're like, I just wanted the best team on the field. But as a manager, you got to take your orders from upstairs. That could be the biggest obstacle for that first question. And there's so much distrust between the two sides that, my God, you know, you could almost see that conflict of interest being too hard to handle. I was vocal about it. And I don't think I was wrong about being vocal about it, that I didn't think baseball should have played in 2020. And by the way, we've seen the fact that the coronavirus is worse now than it was when everything began. I don't think I was wrong. Now, again, I enjoyed the season. They played. I do a baseball podcast in which I sell Built Bars in order to, you know, make some of the money that I made during the pandemic, all, you know, full disclosure. And so, yeah, I covered it. I enjoyed it. There are times that I am on a diet and someone brings a plate of brownies. I said, I really shouldn't eat those brownies because I'm on a diet. But, you know, I wound up having a brownie. You know, sometimes you enjoy things that in your heart of hearts, you're like, I don't know if this should be happening. But I, you know, eventually they had a season. It was a fun season, but COVID rose its ugly head, even during the celebration of the World Series title. And the thing that I had said, if you remember when I was doing some of these back in May, June, July, when it was not clear we were going to have baseball at all, I said, like, look, if there's not going to be a season, then take advantage of this time and bang out the CBA. Bang it out now, because you had the cover. Both sides had the cover. You could have the negotiations get as nasty as you want. You say, why is there no baseball? Because there's a freaking pandemic on. Let's get this done. And I know. Manfred, who I can't stand, and Tony Clark, who, believe me, he is no Marvin Miller or Don Fear. And so, which may be a good thing. The fact that he is someone who has lived through the strikes and everything like that. He's been there, done that. He understands the sacrifices would be made. Look, I don't know Tony Clark, and I don't know enough about negotiations, and I don't know Rob Manfred. I know I'm not a big fan of a lot of things he's done as manager. But both sides have to know what I've been screaming about for quite some time now, and that is baseball cannot afford a work stoppage for even a day, because people will move on. People will find the next Tiger King or Queen's Gambit to get hooked on. There's so much entertainment, and it's so easy to move your thumb and click on it. We can watch Mandalorian and British baking shows and all the back episodes of The Office in the world. And if people say, do you know what, there's no baseball on, it will be almost a relief when I find out, like, do you know what? There's a show everyone's watching. Ah, do you know what? It turns out it's not great. Do you know what? Fine. I've got something else to do. There's so much entertainment, and that's what baseball is. Don't think of it as a sport. Don't think about, oh, how is it going to be compared to football, basketball, baseball, hockey, college sports, all the different stuff. Don't compare them as sports. They're entertainment content. That's what they are. And baseball could be the greatest sport for the internet age because they create new content all the time. There's always a new show. There's always a new game. You miss that game, there's another one on now. You can't really binge watch baseball, but there can always be one on. And because it's so easy to, you know, break down the play, break down the pitch, break down the at-bat, you can follow it. You can follow all the numbers. You can follow all the different stuff. You can follow it online. You can do all sorts of crazy stuff with it. It's all available with constantly new content being refreshed. And baseball needs to do that. That's the main thing that these two need to be talking about. When you get hooked on TV revenue, it reminds me when Conan O'Brien was going through that whole thing based upon whether he's going to be on at 11:30 or 12 o'clock at night. When it turns out it didn't really matter because nobody watches TV like that anymore. They're just going to watch the clips on YouTube or they'll watch the clips online. And for baseball, if they're going to be haggling over TV revenues and everything like that, that's old news. What they need to be doing is figuring out not just haggling over the percentage, but how do you open up that can of sardines? There's a can of sardines out there that's filled with money. And I understand that that analogy has way too many metaphors packed into it like sardines, but that's how much money there is in there that we can shove so many metaphors in there. There's a pot of gold at the end of this rainbow that if they play it right, everyone could make so much money that their great-great-grandkids could go to law school without taking out a loan. And if they're interested in money, then they should be having dollar signs and realize that they're going to be a combination of Richie Rich, Scrooge McDuck, and Bobby Bonilla on Bobby Bonilla Day. In order to do that, they have to bang this out now. They have to bite their tongue, make sure not to say the wrong thing. They can say all the wrong things behind closed doors, but they got to say, look it. We could make piles and piles of money and have a product that everyone loves. But the nanosecond we take ourselves out of the queue, we're done. We're done. Get all this out of the way now. The environment for sports is different now than it was in 1994. It's totally different. And I've talked about that before. I'm not going to get into everything about that, but you know, and I know, that the sports landscape from 1994 when the last big strike happened and now they're not even distant cousins. When was the last time you waited for Sports Center to find out the highlights or to find out who won the game? When was the last time you made television watching in terms of sports your appointment as opposed to your device watching? You know, the way the national media covers a certain topic is irrelevant. You know, when was the last time you waited for Sports Illustrated to read about a certain game or a certain event? Never. It doesn't happen anymore. If you can't read about 40 minutes after the game ended, you're like, what the hell is going on here? So they have to adapt to that. And they can't have any amount of time haggling over, well, you know, trying to play it out through the press and say, we're going to threaten to lock out, we're going to threaten to strike. No, both sides have to know that. And maybe this is where an arbitrator needs to be in, because baseball could have its greatest decade. They've got great stars. They have great, you know, potential matchups. Teams are fun. The type of play is fun. And it's we're turning the page on a lot of things. It could be a great, great era to adapt to the internet world in a way that the NBA certainly has. And they've got a smart commissioner. And they figured out how to make their product sing in the internet age. And baseball has to do the same thing. And first things first, you got to bang out a CBA. And you got to do it now. Don't wait till the end of the season. Don't do your homework on the bus ride. Get it done now so we have a whole season to just focus on the game. Will it be rough negotiating now? Absolutely. Will it be easy? Not at all. Am I going to ask another question that you can't answer that I'll answer for you? You bet I'm going to. But, Jeff, you know, and I know, baseball can't have a work stoppage. All the Built Bars in the world won't be able to fix that. So send me topics, please. Just keep them on coming. Keep them coming. I'm having fun doing this, but I'd like to hear what you want me to talk about. So go to the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app and go to all the different places where you can follow podcasts. This has been the Sunday Requests for Locked On MLB for the 6th day of December 2020. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.